This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
There is love like a river. Like a river in my soul. There is love like a river. Oh, love like a river.
Hello, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Rachel Geringer, and in this episode, we bring you a medley of local, regional, and national news, from voting predictions as caucus season begins to an inaugural meeting between mine agencies in an attempt to tackle black lung. And from the Apple Shop Archive, in honor of Black History Month, we bring you audio from the late blues musician Nat Reese performing live at Seedtime on the Cumberland in 1993. Officials with the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration met with health researchers Wednesday to discuss ways to better protect coal miners from the dust that causes black lung disease. Sydney Bowles reports it was an inaugural meeting between agencies that haven't always agreed on how to address the disease.
Scientists with the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, or NIOSH, have been encouraging MSHA to regulate silica dust for almost 50 years, but MSHA has resisted those recommendations. Now, the agencies are working together to identify reasonable steps that could protect miners from silica, a major contributor to black lung disease. The meeting comes as NIOSH researchers continue to track the epidemic levels of black lung disease among Appalachian coal miners. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
A new survey from APM Research Lab shows our attitudes across the country towards immigrants shift depending on the makeup of our local communities.
We appreciate immigrants. But coming into the country illegally isn't the way to do it.
When I came here, it was like, wow, there was so much diversity. I feel like I belong.
If they're willing to come in and support my business, that's great.
As caucus and primary season launches, producer Andrea Tudhope of America Amplified Election 2020 spent time with residents of Denison, Iowa, where immigrants make up at least a third of the local population.
It's a Monday night at the Norelius Library in Denison, a week before the Iowa caucuses, which Alma Puga calls the Disneyland of politics. The young Latina activist is hosting a mock caucus.
We're going to caucus for food instead of, you know, candidates.
Okay, so I got ceviche.
In separate corners of the room, there's pepperoni pizza, carne asada tacos, and egg rolls, a multicultural spread reflecting a diverse town here in rural Iowa. Of about 9,000 residents, at least 3,000 are immigrants, and it's probably more than that. It's a shift that began a few decades ago.
When you grow up in a predominantly white community, that's what you're used to, with very few minorities. And when you have an influx, it changes everything.
Growing up in the 80s, Troy Gelson remembers only a few minority families. He says it was hard in the beginning.
It's gotten a lot easier, but it should. It's been 3 decades at least.
The national survey from APM Research Lab suggests this sense of acceptance may have to do with proximity.
If you have more immigrants in the county in which you live, you're much more likely to feel positively about welcoming immigrants sort of on a national policy level.
Craig Helmstetter directed the survey, which asked Americans how they feel about the number of immigrants in this country. 41% said they feel the U.S. has the right amount. 26% felt it should allow more. And close behind, 25% said the country allows too many. Some of the respondents who said too many still had positive things to say about immigrants, that they work hard and contribute to the local economy. In Denison, Troy Gelson and his brother Brett say the immigrants in town have helped them keep their family's clothing store open. Brett Gelson tells me he just booked 7 tuxedos for a quinceañera.
I don't want this to sound insensitive, but I've got to survive and provide for my family, too. And if they're willing to come in and support my business, that's great.
Years ago, Troy Gelson remembers asking newcomers, why Denison, Iowa?
My neighbors told me once it was a good place to raise a family. can you say against that? I mean, that's, who doesn't want that?
Across the street at the Robin's Nest coffee shop, owner Brian Bryant says legal immigrants are appreciated, but
a lot of the newer ones, they come in and they expect things without participating.
For Bryant, participating means maintaining small-town rural Iowa values. For Alma Puga, the Latina activist, it's the same. She's growing roots here. But it's also about celebrating differences.
When I came here, it was like, wow, like there was so much diversity and it was like, I feel like I belong.
High school senior Chris Espino shares that sense of belonging, even though he's experienced discrimination. He was born in the U.S., but his parents came here from Mexico.
It hurts a little bit. I mean, you sit there and you're thinking, you're like, well, what am I doing wrong?
But he feels that the people in his community, which he defines as all of Denison, who have fear or resentment towards immigrants, that they've been, as he puts it, neglected. And he wants to work to find better ways to reach them. In Denison, Iowa, I'm Andrea Tudhope, and this is America Amplified.
Americans are divided on lots of issues, but a new survey shows across partisan lines, people agree on at least one thing. The U.S. healthcare system needs fixing.
You know, we have the most expensive healthcare in the world in America.
Hospitals and doctors and pharmaceutical companies are more interested in the bottom line than how it's going to benefit people.
We need to fix the system. It's the system that's broken. It's not the people.
Side Effects Public Media's Christine Herman spoke with several people who participated in the survey from Public Agenda and USA Today. Her report is part of the America Amplified Election 2020 collaboration.
I connected with people all across the political spectrum who were eager to share their stories. People like 51-year-old Celeste Smith, a Republican in Bella Vista, Arkansas. She was diagnosed with thyroid cancer in 2014. Even with insurance and paying some costs up front, the surgery she needed left her on the hook for $6,000.
Which I didn't have. And it was very, very difficult for us to try and negotiate making payments to the hospital.
Smith ended up getting sued by a collection agency.
I'm trying to recover from, you know, having this cancer surgery and getting it removed and the subsequent meds and tests that I have to get done. We did wind up, you know, making a deal with them to pay a smaller amount, which they agreed to. But it took having my credit essentially ruined for a couple of years. They got their money ultimately, but it really hurt us.
Kelly Schmid in Faribault, Minnesota can relate. She's 48 and politically independent. She has a health condition that has required numerous surgeries to remove cysts and bone spurs. And when she was in her 30s, her health got worse.
I got really sick and we couldn't figure out why. My deductible at that time in 2004 was $1,150. And so we maxed that out probably, I think, at the end of January, beginning of February. I mean, that's 1 month into the year. And this year in 2020, my deductible is $11,500. And we are going to hit that max by the end of next month. The deductibles go up every year. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. They just go up.
Schmidt is frustrated with the rising rates and the fact that it's often impossible to know what a procedure is going to cost up front. In Boston, 35-year-old Michael Weidman, a left-leaning independent, shares that sentiment.
Just this month I went to the dentist and it cost me something like $400. And that's a lot of money. And that's with insurance. I know for a lot of people that would be severely difficult to cover. I can afford to pay some of these costs, but I'm also avoiding healthcare at the same time. For instance, I would greatly benefit from going to see a counselor, as would a lot of people, but most insurance doesn't cover counseling, mine including.
The people I spoke with place blame in different places: doctors, hospitals, insurance companies, even politicians. But the survey shows Republicans and Democrats actually have very similar goals for the healthcare system, like making it more affordable. They also largely agree that people with pre-existing conditions should be able to get coverage, that the elderly and disabled should have long-term care, and that hospitals should be more transparent about prices.
And they also have very relatively similar ideas on how it should go about doing that.
Chris Jackson is with the research firm Ipsos, which conducted the survey with Public Agenda and USA Today.
The commonality only really starts to break down when you talk about who's going to pay for things. And that's still sort of the point of division.
But Jackson sees hope. He says the findings suggest that if we can focus on common ground, it could be the beginning of a less vitriolic, more productive dialogue about how to create a healthcare system that works for all Americans. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Christine Herman. This is America Amplified.
America Amplified is a national public media collaboration focused on community engagement reporting. A familiar protest took place this January in Pike County, Kentucky. Sydney Bowles brings us the story of a group of jilted miners blocking a coal train to demand their pay.
On Monday, January 13th, two coal miners, along with their wives, blockaded a railroad track in the Pike County, Kentucky community of Kemper. The miners worked for Quest Energy, and they said they hadn't been paid in 3 weeks. The blockade lasted 3 days, and it had echoes of the months-long Black Jewel Railroad blockade from this summer. Those Black Jewel miners didn't know it at the time, but they were creating a whole new way for coal miners to protest unfair working conditions. Today, we bring you the voices and sounds of the Quest blockade.
I got them too.
That we're all in this together.
We all got them right here.
And we're asking you to come and let the train move till we can be paid and for further jobs.
I'm a coal miner with Quest Energy at Mine 15 on Johns Creek, Kentucky. We've been working there for, going on 3 weeks without pay. We've been promised our paychecks last Friday, Monday. Now they're saying Wednesday or Thursday. And they said that there wouldn't be nothing going on. And a bunch of us rode over here today, and they had a train loaded with the train hooked up, getting ready to take off with it and try to – I took it like this, trying to do us like Prairie County Coal over not pay us and stuff. And, you know, it's hard to go between two rocks and work every day and not get paid for it. You know, they need to understand we have got bills and we've got kids. And there's men's getting their power bills cut off. There's men's children starving and stuff. And they don't care as long as this coal goes. And so as long as it takes, we're going to be here until we get our money. All we want is what we worked out and rightfully paid for, and no more lies and not being put off.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like, I mean, I covered the Black Jewel thing the whole time that happened. Were you guys paying attention to that?
Yeah, I watched it on the news.
What did you think about that?
I thought it was a shame the way they done them men. I mean, and it's dirty that anybody owns mines and harries people, just like their handbook says, we pay off every Friday. Well, I've not seen a paycheck get paid off every Friday since I've been here, and I've been here going on 8 months.
Yeah. So why did you decide to do a train blockade?
Just like because something, we had to do something to catch their attention.
Grab it.
Thank you, buddy. We really appreciate it. All right, thank you very much. All right, thank you. And like this guy here, he don't even know none of us, but his dad's a coal miner, and all the people over here at Blackburn Bottom's been very, very good to us. Just like you've seen them bringing the water, pizza, and stuff. Because, you know, there's more men on their way. They're having to do a carpool to get here because they ain't even got money to even get here. And they don't live 15, 20 minutes away.
Yeah, how much do you owe? How much do you owe?
Figure it out.
How much do you owe? One check?
We'll pay. Yep.
We'll pay. We'll pay you ourselves.
I got a job.
How much do you owe you?
You bet paper standing there.
How much do you owe you, honey?
So let's start from the top. How did we wind up on this train track today?
Well, to be honest about it, they've had our checks held back for 3 weeks. Our last payday was December the 27th. And actually that was late because it was the 30th when we actually got paid. But if you look on our paycheck app, it's the 27th. So I guess we're all going to be going by the 27th. And it's always, it'll be here Monday. Well, it'll be here Wednesday. Well, Friday, we're going to pay both checks. Well, it'll be here Monday. It'll be here Wednesday. You need to pay your bills. If you can't afford to pay us, why work us? That's what I don't understand. And they say, well, we're doing you a favor. At least you're still working. Well, you know, it costs some of these boys $30, $40 a day just to get to work. Now, eventually, they're bumming money off parents, you know, off of neighbors, friends. I mean, it's virtually impossible to continue to work without getting paid.
What's it been like for you to go 3 weeks without pay?
Well, luckily, I only live like 8 miles away, and I drive a Toyota. So I filled it up last time we got paid, because I usually fill it up every time we get paid. Even if it ain't empty, I keep it full. I've worked for this place for almost 2 years, and we go through this. Every holiday, especially, we go through this. And like I said, I mean... if I hired you to cut my grass and couldn't pay you, I wouldn't tell you to cut my grass.
So what's the, tell me the logic about, like, why blockade the train? Why stand on a train track instead of doing something else?
Well, it's hurting their pocket. That's the only way we can get their attention. I mean, we've worked for them. We didn't miss no work, which I didn't miss no work. I don't know if anybody else did or not, but. We listen to them, lie after lie after lie. So we blocked the train for collateral.
Yeah.
Because, yes, by law, they did do right. They paid us up to date. But, I mean, you got to look. We had to sit here and more or less sleep in a mud hole for 3 days just to get the 2 weeks that we were behind. Cole has raised me, and I'm trying to raise my family on Cole. And it's all I ever know. Like I said, I got 20 years in the mines, and it's all I've ever done. And, you know, I wish we could continue Cole, because it's a big part of a lot of people's lives here. It's all they know. It's all we all know. And I understand, you know, about all the other resources and clean energy and all that, but I don't know. I've probably slept 5 hours and 3 days on a rock. I'm stressed out and really don't even know if I'm coming or going at the moment. I'd love to go home and hug my kids, but I'm trying to get these co-owners or the management or whoever it is just to pay us on time. Aren't we worth that?
You're listening to Mountain News on 88.7 WMMT. I'm Sydney Bowles.
Last in this episode of Mountain News, February is Black History Month, so we poked around in the Apple Shop archives to bring you the following recording of Nat Reese performing at Seed Time on the Cumberland Festival in 1993. We found this bio of Nat Reese on the website of the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame.
That's a hard case, ain't it? Yeah, that'll make you wake up and put the cat outdoors.
One of West Virginia's few traditional blues artists, Nat was a nationally recognized blues singer and guitarist who lived in Princeton for nearly all of his life. Born in Salem, Virginia in 1924, his family moved to Wyoming County, West Virginia 4 years later, settling in Princeton in 1935. There, Nat was exposed to a wide range of musical styles, from big band jazz and popular music to blues, polkas, and country music. He began playing the guitar as a young man and performed in various string bands that played throughout the coal fields in the days before racial integration. For a time, he led a group called the Starlight Gospel Singers, based in Wyoming County, and later he concentrated on blues and swing music, often appearing with renowned fiddler Howard Armstrong. Howard and Nat traveled and performed extensively, including several European tours. In addition to his many musical talents, Nat was also a gifted artist and a commercial sign painter. Nat Reese received the Vandalia Award in 1995 and the John Henry Award in 1988. He passed away in 2012. This is Nat Reese, recorded live at Apple Shop's annual festival, Seed Time on the Cumberland, in 1993.
Night begin to fall. I lie all alone. Oh, and I wish I could hold you in my arms again tonight. Oh, 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 darling. I still love you, and I love you for myself, but you're gone, oh, you're gone and left me for someone else. Now when night begin to fall, I lie all alone. Oh, and I wish I could hold you in my arms. Yes, I love you. Love you for myself. But you're gone. You're gone and left me for someone else. Oh, yes, you know I can't eat at night. I can't eat a bite. I lay awake too, wondering if you're still all right. Ever since I fell for you,
thank you. If there's any preachers in the house, I didn't write this.
That was the late Nat Reese of Princeton, West Virginia, performing live on the Apple Shop stage in 1993 during Seed Time on the Cumberland.
There's love like a river.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at wmmt.org or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. Music on this episode features Earl Gilmore with a tune called Love Like a River from his album From the Depths of My Soul. That album was produced by Apple Shop's own June Apple Recordings in 1977. I've been your host and producer, Rachel Geringer, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio. In my soul, it flows on and on forever. It flows on and on forever.
like a river in your soul.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.